Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Cedarville Stories podcast. I'm Mark Weinstein, and joining me today on the program is Aaron Perry, a rising junior at Cedarville University who has an entrepreneurial spirit about him that you'll discover by listening to this program, as he's recently created a new product that will help individuals who like to run. We'll get into that topic at length today on the podcast. By introduction, Aaron is majoring in finance at Cedarville University. He's from Overland Park, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City. A little more than 2 years ago, Aaron created a startup business called Ultralight Running, and this past year, he took his business to Cedarville's traditional pitch, a competition that Aaron did quite well in, and we'll talk about that as well on the program. So for now, let's go to my conversation with Aaron Perry. Welcome, Aaron. Great to have you in studio. Now, you're a rising junior, as I just mentioned, and which is good news. The bad news is you've completed 2 years. You have two more years to go before you graduate. Or should I ask you the question, did you bring enough credits in your freshman year that maybe you're farther than a rising junior?
No, sir. Just a rising junior.
Just a rising junior. So you have two more years to go.
Yep.
When you came to Cedarville as a freshman, did you have any idea how you would use your education? Do you have dreams, aspirations that you were probably looking to fulfill?
For sure. So first of all, thanks for having me on. So I originally came in as a mechanical engineer.
Did you?
Always loved working things with my hands and doing a lot of design work. So came in as a mechanical engineer. I wanted to use my degree, no matter what it was, to start my own business. So I was always wanting to run my own business. I did that in high school with just flipping stuff on eBay. So
Okay. Didn't
have to have a summer job that way, which I liked. Worked on my own schedule. So came in as a mechanical engineer. Found out that I love math, but the disconnect happened when I went into physics and trying to implement that math into real life situation. So I decided to switch to finance because math was still incorporated there. But I've learned that that's been a great switch because given my entrepreneurial mindset, the business side of things has really helped out.
When you talk about the disconnect was physics, I understand. That would be a disconnect for me as well. So as I was doing research in preparation for today's program, I learned how you turned a high school career of soccer into a love of running. And one thing that I found interesting is you actually hated running in soccer. So share with us the story of how running became an interest to you and that ultimately led to you starting a new business.
For sure. So I played soccer for, I think, 12 years, so definitely over a decade. And at practice, you're punished by running. And so I always saw running as a punishment. And I eventually decided to run a marathon. So that was after my junior year and heading into my senior year of high school. And I decided to do a marathon. I'd never run any distance longer than a half marathon. The half marathon happened in 10th grade, and it was just off the couch, and it was a train wreck. I didn't sleep that night. But
after that half marathon, I think you described it as a runner's high, which really motivated you to keep going. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So I didn't know what a runner's high was. My third grade teacher, who I'm close friends with because she went to my church,
Okay. She
told me what a runner's high was. I was like, that's what I had. And so that's what kept me going for that half marathon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, ran the Garmin Marathon in Kansas. That's where their HQ is at. It was very challenging, as a lot of people can attest to, but I really enjoyed it. After the race, I went to get some lunch with some friends, and I was already looking at races that night to sign up for. And there's just something about crossing that finish line. I don't know what it is, but I know that runners and people who cross finish lines can really back my opinion on that. So,
So in this research, you mentioned that during your senior year, you ran the marathon, which was impressive. I would love to run a mile. But what caught my attention was in the summer before you enrolled at Cedarville, so just after you graduated from high school, you were traveling across the country and you did a rim to rim run, which is about 25 miles at the Grand Canyon. Take us back to that experience and what you saw and what you learned.
For sure. So that was kind of like my senior present traveling across the U.S. So I had my dad's car, a Honda Pilot, and I pretty much just decked it out with a bed, some storage, and like a 5 gallon drum of water for my water source. And I traveled from Kansas all the way over to the Grand Canyon, then back down through New Mexico up to my sister's place, Amarillo, and then into Oklahoma where my uncle's at. So that was like a dream of mine to do that. And I did it. And the kind of the pinnacle of that trip was running the rim to rim. And I wanted to do it for just because that sounds amazing.
It does.
But I also had an ultra marathon, a 50K, which is around 32 miles that summer. So when I got back, I did that race. So this is kind of prep for it.
Okay.
So that whole trip, I didn't hike once. I ran everywhere I went. So when I did it, hopped on a trail, I was running to prep for that. I decided to do the rim to rim. The original plan was a rim to rim to rim.
Right.
That's a 50-mile trek, and I can get into why that didn't happen.
Yeah, I want to know why it didn't happen, because that was my next question.
For sure. So I think it was July, so it was a terrible time to go to the Grand Canyon, like just the temperature.
Pretty hot.
Especially when you go to the bottom. There's something called Death Valley, and it's just like a black box that attracts all the heat. And so I decided to start running at 5:30 p.m., so through the night. I got to the other side in 7.5 hours. So was running through the night. There's a river down there, so I was able to get some water. There's a few places you could fill up. I got to around 6 miles from the top, and I started to throw up.
Yeah.
And so I was clearly dehydrated, because looking back, I realized I wasn't taking in enough electrolytes. And so I threw up, I started hallucinating, and I got to the top. I went from north to south. North is super rural. And then south has like the hotel and all the resort stuff.
Okay.
So got to the south, went up to the front desk at 2 a.m., asked if I could have a glass of water and sleep on their bench inside. So I slept on their bench. And then the next morning, I got a bus ride back. And one of my biggest regrets to this day as a 20-year-old is not going back. Like I think I'm going to go this summer to attempt that again for my other race that's happening this summer.
So when are you thinking? I mean, you don't want to go in July again, do you?
It'll probably be end of May, because my brother-in-law wants to come with me. So I think I'm going to do that to prep for my 100-mile race this summer.
So by the time this program airs, you will have already done that. So we'll have to check back with you and see how it went.
Sure.
So tell me what the rim, where that is. Because in my mind, rim to rim was like north rim to south rim, but you actually went down in the valley?
Yeah, so the rim to rim is you start at north or south, and you just take the trail into the canyon and then back up.
And you go all the way down.
Yep. So you go down the elevation and then straight across. It's pretty flat at the bottom. It's still very hot. And then you ascend to the top, and then rim to rim to rim is just doing that thing in reverse. So it's just there and back, really.
Okay. How long did it take you to run the 25 miles from the two rims? And what was the terrain like?
The trails are really well maintained, because a lot of people hike them. So it takes around 3 days to hike across. There's campgrounds along the way. And so there's a lot of people hiking that trail, not a lot of people running it, but for a runner, since it's all, the gravel's all packed down, you have a decent kind of trail to run on. It is hilly, but when you get down to the bottom, it's relatively flat. So you have a river that runs along the trail. So I was able to I jumped in at one point in time because it was too hot.
Yeah.
And so I got to cool down there. And then just the only really uphill and downhill is just coming down into the canyon and then back
up. Okay. Is that the Colorado River?
It is.
Okay. And now, I've been told there's a beautiful waterfall down there. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah, that was at the very beginning. I pretty much ran through the night, like I said. So a lot of the beautiful scenery I wasn't able to see, which was kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But at the very beginning, on the north side, there's a waterfall. I didn't go. There's another trail that takes you to it to get a better view. I saw it from a distance, but I didn't see it up close.
So I assume starting at 5:30, you did that because that alleviated some of the heat, right?
A lot of the heat, yep.
So, but how difficult is it to run at night? I mean, what kind of lighting did you have that allowed you to make sure you had safe footing going down and coming up?
For sure. So I had light going down. Whenever you're doing something like this, you stereotypically would run the flats and the downhills, and then you'd walk the uphills. So I ran down the canyon on that trail, and so I had lighting then, and so I could see all the steps and things like that. When I got to the bottom, I had a little bit of light for a few miles, and then eventually I had to switch to a headlamp. And so I was just running with the headlamp the whole time. And then ascending, you're walking it. And so you have the headlamp to see. And a lot of it, you don't need a whole lot of lighting because you're just taking steps. I mean, the elevation is a pain, but...
Yeah, but you don't want to fall off a cliff.
Correct. And that's what you got to be careful with. I mean, the headlamp usually does the trick. And the funny thing is the ultramarathon I did that summer when I got back was actually at night too. So it really kind of lined up nicely.
I assume that's the most aggressive, difficult thing you've done in running?
Yes, as of right now.
As of right now?
As of right now.
What's next?
What's next? Yeah. Well, it's the Leadville 100 this summer in August.
Okay.
So Cedarville Welcome Home Weekend is when the race is. And so I'm running 100 miles across the Colorado Mountains.
Last year, after your freshman year at Cedarville, you completed a half Ironman, which includes a 1.2-mile swim, a 56-mile bicycle ride, and a 13.1-mile run. Where was this held And how did you train for such a rigorous, long event?
I was originally going to do it in Ohio because of the timing. And then my mom's like, well, let's do it something a little more pretty so it's a little more scenic. So if the family—
Wait, Ohio's
up,
pretty.
I mean, compared to Maine, that's where it happened.
Oh, okay. Well,
Maine's pretty.
I'll give you Maine.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where it eventually happened. So
okay.
Kind of did a little more research and did it in Maine August 2nd, I believe. And my birthday was August 4th. So got to be able to celebrate my birthday in Maine. So I went up to Augusta, Maine, and I have some relatives who live up there, and they're right on the river where I swam. And so I went up there a week early and was able to stay at their place and do some training there for a week. But prior to it, the training that I did took me, I think, around 4 months. A lot of the training is, it's nice because pretty much you're cross-training the whole time. And what that means is, if say I'm running a 100-mile race, the cross-training is the cycling or the swimming. Ironman, it's a triathlon, so you're swimming, you're biking, you're running, so you're kind of always cross-training. And so a lot of it, you should be able to go from a swim to a bike and not have really any fatigue. And so you want to, like, the swim is the warm-up in a way.
Okay.
And then the bike is, you can either go hard on it or not. And I did, because I wanted to try and get a specific time goal. And then you have to run the half marathon. And a lot of it is just with the training, you of course train each discipline, but there's something called a brick workout where you would go from a swim to a bike immediately, or you go from the bike to the run. They call them biker's legs. So when you get off the bike, you have to run the half marathon or marathon if you're doing a full Ironman.
Sure.
And so trying to figure that out was the most challenging part, probably.
Okay. So it's obvious to me and probably to our listeners that from your first run, that half marathon, you caught the running bug. How many marathons, ultra marathons, half Ironmans have you participated in the past 2 years?
I think around 3 half marathons, just 1 half Ironman, and just 1 ultra.
Okay. And so you said the next thing on your bucket list is that 100-mile run. Why?
Why? That's a great question. So I was originally going to do a full Ironman this summer. And I said, if I didn't get into this 100-mile race. And I was blessed enough to get into this 100-mile race because it's very challenging to get into. And I can go into that. But
yeah,
you can get in through 2 ways. You can qualify through a race, or you can get a lottery ticket and they just do a drawing. And I actually didn't have to do either. My gym back home, which is where I partly trained for half Ironman, was a sponsor for this race. And they allocate a specific amount of tickets or entries to this race.
Yeah.
And nobody signs up for it. So I was able to get one of those entries and kind of guarantee my slot in this race. And so that's why I'm doing the 100-mile instead of a full Ironman. But the 100-mile race it's a dream race. I don't know. There's something about it. And so I the longest run or race in general I've ever done was that 50K. And so we're going to do a little more than 3 times that.
Okay. Have you ever had a thought of trying to qualify and then compete in the Boston Marathon?
I have a lot of friends on the track team, and I see that the paces that they hold, and I've tried to do like some fast paced things. And for my age, people can definitely do it, but I'm more of like a slow twitch muscle guy, which means I can go a long time for pretty slow.
Whoa.
But going fast for a short period of time, maybe sprints I could possibly do, but doing a 26.2 mile at like a 6 minute per mile pace sounds crazy to me.
So your goal when you're running is to finish more so than trying to really get a fast time.
For the majority of my races, yes. Now, when I get closer, I get more confident, and so I add a time frame.
Right.
Like the 100-mile race, I have a time frame of sub 25 hours.
For our listeners, pray for Aaron as he trains, as he competes in these amazing races. It's amazing. Aaron, for a person so young, you've accomplished a lot, but there's more to your story, and that's the entrepreneurial side. And that's really what the podcast was about today, but I got interested in your running. Your most recent business, the Ultralight Running, is your 4th business startup in 20 plus years. How is this business going compared to your first 3 ventures?
The first 3 businesses, I wanted those to supplement for a summer job in high school.
Okay.
And so they were purely to make money. And I'll be honest with you, I lost money on all 3 of those.
Did you really? A lot?
No, because I didn't put in a lot.
What were the ventures?
I started my first one during my road trip around the U.S. I remember that distinctly.
Okay.
And that was just like a men's clothing company. And then the second one was a kind of memorabilia shop for Queen Elizabeth when she passed away, something like that. And then the third one was a gym clothing brand because that was really going off at the time. And all 3 of those I mean, I put in the work for them to try and create some money through it. But I, like I said, the sole intent was to make money and not to create value. And that mindset has completely switched. I'm purely in it to create value because I love the community. I'm part of the ultramarathon community. And if money is a part of it, then great. Yeah, there's one other, which is just flipping things on eBay. So I went to real estate sales, auctions, just bought things and flipped them. And that, I made more money doing that than my summer jobs. And so that was where I actually did make money.
So how's your current venture of ultralight running compared to the, obviously it's going better than the first three, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Tell me about it.
The business is for ultramarathon runners. And I wanted to create something for the ultramarathon community because in my mind, based on my research, it's a growing community. So it's like pickleball.
Let me take a step back. So we say ultramarathon. Now, I'm familiar with a marathon, 26.2 miles. What's an ultramarathon?
So an ultramarathon is any distance longer than a marathon. So a marathon is 26.2 miles. And so technically, according to the definition, 26.3 miles is an ultramarathon.
Okay.
However, the stereotypical distances are 50K, which is 31 miles, 100K, which is around 62, and then 50 miles, 100 miles. And then you can go to the races that are 240, 200 miles. And there's a few people that I'm following that are wanting to do 500. And those distances, all the ones that I listed off, are nonstop. So there's no, your breaks are max 20 minutes if you're going to stop.
How is your current venture more successful than your first three?
It's more successful because there's a different motive behind it. And so I wanted to, like I stated earlier, I wanted to create value and wanted to create something that I personally would use. And there wasn't something on the market that fixed that issue.
Okay.
And so I decided to, my original product idea was a headlamp. And I used my engineering skills to CAD, which is a 3D rendering software, designed this headlamp and had it 3D printed with one of my friends had a 3D printer, had that printed off, talked to some manufacturers. They quoted me around $25,000 to get the product in hand to give to a manufacturer. And personally, I didn't have that capital. And then given the design of the headlamp, it was going to cost me another $25,000 for a patent because this would need a full utility patent. And that's $50,000 and I don't have that. And I wanted to still create the business. I had that wall that was put up in front of me, but I didn't let it stop me. I still wanted to create this. And so I pivoted and wanted to create something and that was still beneficial, and that's where I came to the hat. And so the endurance hat looks like a normal running hat, but incorporates two pockets for your running gels, your key fob, possibly an ID or things along those lines. So it still is super practical for runners of any distance, but it allowed me to build capital for hopefully creating this headlamp in the future.
So it's like a normal running hat, and that's where you put your valuables in. Does that, by adding the valuables in the pockets, does that make it bulky or awkward? Or
that's one of the main things that came up when we were first designing it. I got the prototypes in. I contacted five different manufacturers, but I got five different samples, tested each one of them out, eventually chose my manufacturer, then critiqued it from there. And I found that the biggest things you're going to hold are your running gels. And so if you have two in your hat, you don't feel it at all. So the biggest item that you're going to put in the hat, you don't feel it all. So everything else beneath that, you're definitely not going
to
feel.
You said something like running gels to a non-runner. What's running gels?
It's like it's a packet full of this goo, maybe like applesauce texture.
Okay.
And it's full of a lot of carbs, a lot of electrolytes, and some even have caffeine. And so really all it is go-go squeeze or something like that. And you squeeze it in your mouth and it has all these different,
it helps
very
you
calorie
with,
dense.
With energy and strength. And
correct.
Okay.
So you could incorporate those into the hat and store them for those runs.
So as an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur that you are, how do you come up with ideas?
My brain is constantly thinking and wanting to create. And a lot of the ideas I have, I look into and realize someone has already done this, or this isn't really practical, this isn't helpful. And I decided to start the business out of my passion. And so the business kind of overall was for ultramarathon runners. And I thought of this hat idea because of wanting to create value for them. And I'm not sure exactly when the idea actually popped into my head. But once an idea pops into my head, I kind of do my market research. I figure out, is this something out there? Do people actually want this? And if I find that those criteria are checked off, if they aren't, then I start doing some more research and try to figure out if I can actually create this item.
So do ideas come from just listening to other people talk and that spurs an idea? Or how do the ideas pop in your head?
I'm honestly, I'm not sure if I have a good answer. I have a lot of ideas that come in my mind, and I have on my many different devices, I have one spot that I just type in all my ideas.
Okay.
And so they're just always flowing. And some of them are really silly and some of them are decent, but I don't have the capital for them.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure exactly where they come from. I know that my thinking, 95% of my thinking comes from running. And then the other 5% comes right before I fall asleep.
How much running do you do a day?
So currently I'm still building to get to a point where I can maintain consistent distances. So Monday I would have done 8. I'm a little sick under the weather, so I didn't run yesterday, but usually I would run between 20 and 30 miles a week, and then I'll cross train once a week. I'm huge into cycling, so I'll cycle as my cross training.
You like running more than cycling?
I think there's a happy balance. I probably say running because I can think then, and so that's part of the reason why I do run and started and consistently kept running was because that's where I think.
Are you seeing that your hat is being well received and helping people, or what's it look like from a business perspective? How's it going?
I was already a part of a running community prior to starting this business. And so I was able to kind of run it by some of my friends. So one of my childhood best friends from when I was a kid, he's a runner. I asked him, I was like, so do you think this is a good idea? And I distinctly remember where I asked him, and he said it was a good idea, but like you brought up, is it going to be clunky? Do people actually need it? And so I started to kind of go down that rabbit trail. And then did a lot of market research. So there's something called Strava, which is kind of just a social media platform for runners or kind of athletes in general. And I started to post on there to try to do some market research. So I posted different surveys and said, do you guys actually want something like this? Like if we did, what colors do you want? And things along those lines. And I got a lot of comments saying like, this is a great idea. I have no clue why no one's ever done this before. And like I've stated multiple times, the reoccurring issue that people think it will be an issue with a hat like this is the clunkiness of it. And it isn't, but that is definitely something that we've tried to.
Okay. So you're an entrepreneur now. Do you envision that's what you're going to be for life, or what's your career aspirations?
Yeah. So I'm an idealist. So I'd love to start something in college and keep doing it after college to have it be self-sustaining. So my career goal is to just keep on with this business. And if I have to do a 9-to-5 to be able to put this on the side and support it, then that's what I'll do. But I love being able to work on something like this and show that this is something that I've created. I mean, and not just me, but to say like, this is a tangible thing that I've built.
So I want to shift the conversation a little bit because all this is great. It's exciting to see a young person with vision, with energy, and make things happen. That's fabulous. But it's a little hollow without Jesus. Mm-hmm. So how are you able to intersect your passion for running and then intersect your faith that's central to your life?
So there's a guy by the name of Nick Bear. He's a lot of the stuff I do, he really inspires me to do them. So the Leadville 100 is one of them. And he started his own business out of college. And he's a Christian. But I never knew he was a Christian because he just wasn't super
outgoing
about it.
Outspoken.
The thing is, his business represented every single value that a Christian would have.
Okay.
And so it was built on integrity, his whole business was. And now that he has this platform, he's come out about his faith. I think that's something similar I want to do. I think in our day and age, a lot of things are being shoved down our throat that we're saying that we have to do this, or we have to say this. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that because a lot of people just reject that ideology, and I think rightfully so. And so I don't want to be like, I'm a Christian company. I don't want to shove Christianity down someone's throat because a lot of people turn away from that. And I want to have my business built on Christian values and the things that are laid out in scripture. And so I'm trying to find that middle ground. Mm-hmm. So based off how I make my guarantee for my business, like how I treat my customers, how my social media is, what I'll post and what I'll repost, things along those lines that really incorporate Christian values.
Yeah. And it's also how you actually live your life day to day. That really matters, right?
For sure.
Have you taken opportunities? Have you seen opportunities to share your faith while running or interacting with people in the running world?
At the end of all my business emails, I have 2 Timothy 4:17, and that's, I love that verse. And someone, I sent that off in some marketing emails, and someone responded saying, I love that verse.
Yeah.
And it was a college student. It's running the race and finishing it well.
Yeah.
It's that verse. And I think it goes great with running, but also just like, I love that mentality.
Yeah. Perseverance.
And so these people see this verse and maybe they don't contact me, maybe they do, but either way, it's in the back of their mind, like, what is that in reference to?
It's inquisitive, potentially make them want to ask questions or look up the reference and maybe sure. pursue Jesus. So through Cedarville University's Plaster School of Business and Dr. Kerry Oberbrunner, who's the Barry Chair of Entrepreneurship, they've come alongside you and helped you, Ultralight Running, and probably helped you as well. How has Dr. Oberbrunner specifically impacted your way of thinking toward entrepreneurship and your journey with Jesus?
Yeah, so I was very excited when I got that email this past summer, leading into my sophomore year, saying that we had Kerry Oberbrunner joining the team. I looked him up on Instagram, and he was verified, and I thought that was so silly that I thought that was a huge deal. But he was verified, which is cool to see. I have a professor that was, and so I dug deeper, and he was a real entrepreneur starting his own businesses.
He is.
And so I was like, that's so exciting. Like, I knew I was going to be a finance major because I'd switched, but I was like, well, I'm just going to take some of these entrepreneurship courses just because I know that this is kind of the mindset that I have, and I'd love to see how right. this goes. And so I took digital marketing in my first semester of sophomore year, and he talked about the Story Brand with Donald Miller. He had that book that he asked us to read, and it's all about kind of the cycle of every single movie, every single book, and it's about how this hero, the customer or the person watching the movie is the hero, and we're the guide guiding through that, and how the hero has to experience some level of fear or dilemma, and the guide helps them through, and that's eventually right. they come back to the top and win and defeat the dragon. That was the first book we read in his class, and I loved it because it was the beginning of this journey where I was making this business, and communication is key. And so I immediately started to fall in love with that class, and it was by far my favorite class last semester. And then this semester, I'm part of his Entrepreneurship Accelerator, which is pretty much where he just comes alongside you and you kind of tell him where you're at in your business or what's the dilemma you've run into, and he kind of guides you through that. And so he's been through this process, and so he's able to walk directly alongside you to point you in the right direction. There's that aspect of it. But then also we have something in class just called, it's called his truth slide. And he's like, what's something that's really stuck out to y'all within the past week that you guys have seen? So he always incorporates Jesus into marketing and whether marketing is biblical and how it is. And so just trying to find that middle ground and find that place where Jesus and marketing and business interlap. He does really well with that.
So you've been at Cedarville 2 years. Who's been influential from a professor's perspective in your 2 years at Cedarville?
There's two people. It's Dr. Oberbrunner and it's Dr. Kira right now. He's my Theo 1 professor. Those are the top two.
Tell me about Dr. Kira.
He is my Theo 1 professor, and this is my first semester with him, so I haven't had him prior to this. And I love philosophy, but he also loves philosophy. And so he incorporates theology and philosophy into his teaching, and it just clicks so well with me. So a lot of the stuff he says, I'm like, ooh, I really like that, and I dig into it. And so a lot of the stuff he makes me think.
Our time is up, so I have one final question. If students listening to this podcast or parents of students interested in advancing their entrepreneurial mind, why should they consider enrolling at Cedarville University?
I think the biggest reason is Dr. Oberbrunner. And the reason why I say that is a lot of college classes and classes just in general are very theory driven, and rightfully so, because a lot of things are evolving. And so if you have the theory behind it, you can always apply it to the current
right.
of technology.
Right.
But the thing is with Dr. Oberbrunner, he has theory, but the majority of the things he teaches are practical and what we should do and can do right now, given the technology. And so, like I've said, he's able to walk alongside each individual person and say, like, this is how we should market now, given the current trend. And so being able to have that practical aspect of incorporated into an entrepreneurship program, I think is one of the biggest reasons why people should consider Cedarville.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And Dr. Oberbrunner brings tremendous wisdom and uncanny amount of energy to the classroom. And I see why students resonate with him and want to take his class. In fact, I heard one class of his has doubled in size because
it has.
He's so engaging. So if you are interested in entrepreneurship, actually even interested in business, I encourage you to check out Cedarville University, the Robert W. Plaster School of Business. I think it'd be worth your time. So That is our time for today's podcast. I want to thank Aaron Perry for joining me today on the program. And I'll be following your running steps this summer as you put out a lot of miles. Thanks for joining me.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank you for listening to the Cedarville Stories podcast brought to you by Cedarville University. You are encouraged to share, like, and review this podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And be sure to come back next week when we'll hear another Cedarville story for God's glory.